Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that vocal shouting. It's Dana and Jay.
This edition of Hear That Podcast Growling is brought to you by Visa, a network working for everyone. As always, Paul Dana Jr. and Jay Morrison here working for you. Jay, how we doing?
Doing well. Counting down the hours till Thanksgiving. This is going to be the best Thanksgiving ever because we're going nowhere and no one's coming here. It's just the four of us.
That's good.
That is great.
The least amount of overhead, the better. We've got a big family function. We're going out to my folks' house, which is always a good time, and I'm excited about it. I hope everybody else is excited about their Thanksgiving. We're thankful for everyone that listens and subscribes to The Athletic. Always great having you on board. We got a lot to get to because it's a big game, big week,
huge,
big weekend in the AFC North. We touched on that a lot on the Tuesday episode. How much is on the line with the Ravens and the Browns playing, the Bengals and the Steelers playing, all bunched up, all four teams over 500. It's just, you're going to see a lot of movement over what happens this weekend. I always love the playoff leverage chart that Brian Burke does on your playoff percentage or your percentage chance of making the playoffs depending on win versus loss. In the middle is the leverage of your game. Two highest leverage games in the entire NFL this week. Yep, both in the AFC North. Weekend for the division. We're going to get into the details of that. We are going to have Mark Caboli, who's playing through pain. People like to take shots at Mark, but I got to credit him. My man popped an Achilles trying to walk into SoFi Stadium in L.A., fought it off. He was back at the facility. Ben Roethlisberger even made a little joke towards him, and he's here with us despite all of that, putting in his time so that Bengals fans can have an inside knowledge of what's going on in Pittsburgh. I don't care what you've ever said or written in the comments, potentially, of the whip around. Tip of the hat. Old tip of the hat for Mark.
Yeah, it really is impressive. And I mentioned that to him in my conversation with him, that he's trying to win over the fans, and he feels like he's already done that. He feels like he's been so complimentary of the Bengals this year that he has them on his side. I don't know if Twitter backs that up. I don't know if the comment section backs that up, but it was really cool of him, because this is an easy week for him to tap out. And I mean, a ruptured Achilles is serious. I mean, we've seen players do it. We've seen coaches here do it. It is a long, grueling rehab. And he's just jumping on his jazzy scooter and going.
Anytime you can acquire the jazzy scooter. So we're going to talk a little bit about the development of the Bengals offense since the last time they played Pittsburgh, and some interesting comments that Mike Tomlin had to say about Ja'Marr Chase this week and some of the reality of those and what it has meant. And a lot of people around the building talked about the change of the Bengals offense in recent weeks as teams have adjusted to Ja'Marr Chase. And I think it's an interesting conversation to have specifically this week as they take on Pittsburgh for a second time, and Pittsburgh will have a very different set of players and strategy to slowing down the Bengals. We're going to talk, of course, a little bit about the defense and those changes that we are going to see on the Steelers side of the ball, what it means. And we'll have your growler bet, which I like. And I don't think it's too sadistic. I think it's in play. We'll have a run passer boot. We'll offer our predictions. Let's take a second. And I do want to remind everybody, Our deal is going on right now. If you are a subscriber, thank you. We appreciate it. If you're looking for a gift, it might have something for you. If you're not a subscriber, listen up. We have our Black Friday subscription deal. It's the best deal we do all year. There's no better time to subscribe than this. It is $1 a month for the next 12 months. We just never give away, do a deal this good. Get it now. If you want, ever thought about subscribing, want to subscribe, want to give a gift, go to theathletic.com/hearthatpodcastgrowling, or if you follow us on Twitter, go to any of our stories and you can click there and subscribe from there, and you'll have our coverage for the duration of the entire year. It's a great time to get in, and I highly recommend doing it now if you've ever thought about it and maybe been hesitant. So get to that deal now, and if you do, you can read the absurd story about the fake flea flicker that I'm still laughing about. In the idea of Zach Taylor saying, you know what I'm going to do in my first ever game as a head coach? I'm going to call flea flicker. I'm going to back that up with a fake flea flicker. Didn't turn out that way, and the things that came from it were even crazier and more hysterical, and I had a lot of fun writing it, but that story's up there for you too if you are a subscriber.
He did get the flea flicker in that first game. That was impressive.
He did.
And it worked. Then,
And it worked again the second time when they ran it against Cleveland a couple of weeks ago, which is why he said, all right, let's bring that fake back out of the vault, get a chance to run it. And they did for 8 yards. And I wrote 1,200 words about it. So let's dive into this game, Jay. I want to start here with this. You know, the first game against the Steelers was a big moment in Ja'Marr Chase's early season breakout. He'd obviously had a very nice game the first 2 weeks. He had two deep balls. But all of a sudden, in a big game in division, here was Ja'Marr Chase making an incredible catch right before halftime. That was a total momentum changer in the game. Catching a second touchdown to help finish it off at the end. And it felt like he was really coming of age then at that point. And the thing is, Mike Tomlin sort of talked about it this week, and he said, look, I see a lot of great receivers coming into this league and tear it up the first couple of months. Then it's on tape, and then defenses adjust, and they play you differently. I will be very fascinated to see how differently the Steelers are playing the Bengals and Ja'Marr Chase this Sunday, because we've seen a lot of other teams play them differently over recent weeks.
Yeah, you would think they would almost have to, but I kind of disagree. I mean, Tomlin, what he said has some merit, but we've never seen anybody come in the way Ja'Marr Chase did. I mean, every week it seemed like we were writing about, he's the first one to have this many yards in this many games and this many touchdowns in this many games. It was beyond what is the normal rookie coming in, not being known and explodes type of situation. But the thing is, and this is what they talked about even before the season started, is if they want to play him differently, i.e. throw most of their attention at him, that, I think Ja'Marr said it today, he's fine with that. Joe Burrow's fine with that. He's going to throw it to whoever the defense tells him to throw it to. You've got T. Higgins, who's yet to really kind of go off in a game this year. He did have a 97-yard game. You've got Tyler Boyd, Steelers, always a big game for him. And now you've got Joe Mixon really getting the run game going. It is a true pick-your-poison type of thing, and I think it's going to help Pittsburgh. It can't not. To get T.J. Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick back, particularly Minka, when you're talking about Ja'Marr Chase, so it's going to be interesting to see how they do scheme up, how much the coverage they roll his way. But I don't know that it's going to matter that much. This even though teams have adapted to Ja'Marr Chase, the Bengals are still scoring 30. Seems like every week, and they're still producing across the board. So I don't know that, you know, kind of trying to take Ja'Marr Chase away is going to be the end all be all for Pittsburgh's game plan.
They've seen teams play him differently. They've seen more zone, more clouds, more all these things where it's just all about keeping everything in front of them and not letting Ja'Marr Chase beat them over the top. The thing is, you know, when we wrote about this and talked to Zach Taylor about offensive identity over the course of this year, he said, well, that's what it is. Our identity is to beat people up over the top and in the passing game to the point that they have to pull a player out of the box. And when they do, we're going to punish them with Joe Mixon. And what that's kind of what we saw specifically in Vegas. It was pointed out that, okay, you haven't seen Ja'Marr Chase really hit a deep ball. Week 1 through 7, he had all those big games and he hasn't really gone off since then. Now, I would point out, and I wrote a lot about it extensively, I'm very aware of it, in week 7, they threw underneath and he roasted the Ravens by hitting those underneath passes and taking them to the next level. We haven't seen him have the yak like he did in that game, but that's still kind of out there for him too. Here's the thing. If you're going to hold the weeks 1 through 7 up against the 3 games that they've played since, is, oh yeah, they're figuring out Ja'Marr Chase. Does it matter? Points per drive, weeks 1 through 7, 2.33, which ranked 12th in that span. Weeks 8 through 11, 2.32, which ranked 8th in that span. Which way do you want to lose? You know, not that not win or lose in the game, but which way do you want to try to stop them? Jay, you mentioned it. They've scored 30 points in 4 of the last 5. They've been better in most offensive categories in recent weeks, and that includes 2 losses.
Yeah.
I'm not even putting in the Ravens game, where, as I mentioned, you absolutely could include that, considering the Ravens did try to stop Ja'Marr from beating them over the top and he beat him underneath. I'm not even doing that, which would skew these numbers even more in that direction. 3-and-out percentage, which was just a terrible issue for them early in the year. Weeks 1 through 7, they were 37% 3-and-out, 31st in the league. Weeks 8 through 11, 26.5%, 6th best in the league. They are taking what the defense is giving them, like you said, and Joe Burrow talked about it on Wednesday. You develop discipline as a quarterback, and you know these teams, this is the way we're seeing a lot of the league playing now. Vic Fangio kind of got this system going. Brandon Staley uses it. A lot of these umbrellas, a lot of these clouds, a lot of keep everything in front of you, force teams and quarterbacks to be disciplined. Well, Burrow's kind of comfortable, and Brian Callahan talked about it too. We have no problem sitting there and taking 5 to 7 yards every throw. We will happily do that. They did it last year a lot. And you've kind of seen that because they've still been able to drive down the length of the field and make it happen for them. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I've got one other stat. I have a bunch of them here, but another one more I want to bring up. Joe Mixon versus a light box in weeks 1 through 7, 4.52 yards per carry, which is 29th out of qualifying running backs, 5.62 in weeks 8 through 11, 9th out of all qualifying running backs. When you do that, it's whatever. I mean, you're taking force players out of the box, and Joe Mixon is wearing people down and beating them. To me, I think it's a matter of, if that's what the Steelers want to do, whoever they play wants to do, go ahead and continue doing it. And that's the beauty of Joe Burrow, is he's comfortable to try to beat you whatever way you'd like to be beaten in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because if they're going to do that, then regardless, if they're playing zone, he's going to have guys running open 5 to 7 yards down the field. He's going to take those throws. And if they do want to press, he's got receivers that can win, that they can get open. And it, as young as he is and this offense is, you're starting to feel more comfortable that they can do that. I mean, the whole point of that is that a defense assumes that you're not going to be able to continue to keep doing and drive down and do these long drives. And we've seen the Bengals, they have had the over the top shots to chase, but they've been able to put together long drives as well. And I don't want to spoil the conversation too much with Kaboli, but that's one of the biggest issues the Steelers have had this year is tackling. And if you're going to throw short slants to Tyler Boyd or Jamar Chase, those guys break one tackle, and it could still end up being a huge gain just doing it the underneath route the way that the Jamar had his long one against Baltimore. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to take away the long gains. It's just a matter of how far the ball travels in the air. And that's going to be something to watch for is, you know, can these guys, can T. Higgins, Joe Mixon, even in screens, if they make that first guy miss, it can turn into some big gains and really get the chunk plays that they need to get down the field quicker.
And I think there's a bit of a misconception that the Bengals haven't been throwing it deep in recent weeks because they haven't seen the big ones at Jamar. How about this? Percentage of attempts going 20-plus air yards, weeks 1 through 7, 11.8%, which was 21st. Last 3 weeks, 13.6%, which is 7th amongst all teams. They've thrown it deep more. They've actually thrown it deep more, just some of them haven't completed, and some of them have gone to other people. And so it's like, you know, they're still taking their shots. It's a misnomer if you don't think they're still taking their shots. They are just driving differently. And in the end of the day, you know, I do think there is something to be said about, look, we're still scoring plenty of points. We're still scoring the way we were. And that's what matters most. You know, Burrow's yards per attempt has gone down. And his air yards per attempt have gone down. Air yards per attempt, not by that much. But his total yards per attempt from the first 7 weeks is 9.27, and he's down to 6.69 the last three games. But again, that can skew. You're talking about three games. The point being, you know, this is what we talked about. This is what we talked about with the Bengals offense and why they were so excited about adding Jamar Chase. Is it gives them so many different ways to beat people. And the fact that they're doing it at the same rate, despite defenses paying more attention and everything that they were talking about with defenses see what he is and they're ready for it, is a great sign, is an encouraging sign in my opinion. But I think Pittsburgh, this game in particular, is a fascinating test case because of what Jamar and that deep ball did in the first game against them.
Yeah, and the Steelers, yes, they didn't have some weapons, or not weapons, but they didn't have some key defensive personnel, but they gave up 41 last week. We talked about the Bengals scoring 30 points. The Steelers had gone since the 2018 season opener without giving up 30 points until last week. I mean, this is not the same Steelers defense that, you know, we were used to seeing the Bengals getting 8 rushing yards in a game and winning games 16-10 or 13-10. It's there. They scored 24 in week 3, and they could have scored a lot more. It was kind of a, I don't want to say it was a call off the dogs type of thing, but they didn't need to take shots. And they really let Pittsburgh dominate that game time of possession wise, because it was just check down, check down, check down. It feels like it can be a statement game. It can be a game that a sweep, which rarely happens with Bengals and Steelers, it won't eliminate the Steelers from the playoffs, but it'll put a big dent in their chances. The Bengals would be up by a game and a half with the season tiebreaker against them. There's so much there, and it feels like this is going to be a game on the shoulders of the Bengals offense. And a lot of times that doesn't feel like a good proposition going into a game against the Steelers, but it feels like that script is totally flipped, that you should feel good about what this offense can do against any defense, let alone the Steelers.
And I think that you can play similarly to what you did against the Raiders last week. You can, mm-hmm. Very much the same way that they offset Ngakoue and Max Crosby. You can offset the return of TJ Watt. TJ Watt's going to be back. Minka Fitzpatrick's going to be back. They're going to have guys they didn't have in the first game. I don't believe Highsmith played in the first game. And that you've got a lot of guys that are total game changers that are back, but we have seen that they can handle that in different ways. And I think you do take a very similar type of game plan that you did against the Raiders and try to get up and chip away and use Mixon to offset the pass rush a little bit and try to run it on Pittsburgh. Teams have been able to run it on Pittsburgh and not be afraid to throw underneath and all that stuff. So for that reason, I think you do feel good about a potential game plan that you've now seen. Hey, let's try to replicate what we just did last week. It worked well and people will believe in it.
Yeah. Steelers 26th in the league in run defense. When have you ever seen that? So yes, you could absolutely just roll last week's game plan into this week. And there haven't been many Bengals backs to go over 100 yards against the Steelers. I looked this up earlier. I should have written it down, but I think it's 133 is the record for any Bengals back against a Steelers defense. It feels like that could be in play. That I don't know where you would set the over under on a betting line for Joe Mixon this week, but I would put it pretty close to the 100 yard mark.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And, we can talk about what it's going to look like. But I just don't think Pittsburgh's all that good. Like when I look at, they have a number of good players. And Mike Tomlin is just, continues to make it work and everything. But like when I look at their schedule and I say, what is the most impressive win? When you talk about what the Steelers have done this year, is it at the Browns?
Week one
against the Bills.
I mean,
we're talking about a Bills team that isn't exactly a world beater in themselves. So, I mean, they beat the Seahawks without Russell Wilson. They're out there stopping Geno Smith, whatever the hell happened in that Detroit game. Like, I don't look at the schedule and see a team. They were down two touchdowns to the Chargers almost the entire game. You get some craziness at the end that makes it close and they end up losing. But they haven't scored like that all season.
No.
And so, I think there's a reputation element to who they are. And I just, they beat Chicago in that game that the refs gave to them. I mean, they did. I've never seen anything quite like it. It's the only game where I've ever thought maybe the NFL is rigged. Like, it's Denver. Are we saying Denver's their best win? Beating Teddy Bridgewater? Mm-hmm. I don't see it necessarily. And maybe I'm wrong, and this league has proven that none of that matters. But I just don't see it with them, and I don't see a team built to get it together and make a run that you're used to seeing the Steelers make this time of year.
Yeah, and I mean it's a quarterback league, and Ben's not going to get fresher and younger and better as the season goes on. I mean, yes, they had that explosion, that 37-point one last week. But this is where they started kind of falling all apart last year. They started 11-0 and then went 1-4 down the stretch. So you're right that none of those games. I mean that the one when they beat the Seahawks didn't have Russell Wilson. They needed overtime to do that. The one where the refs handed them the game against the Bears, they still only won that game by two. They have not looked overly impressive. Now, the week one won at Buffalo. I gave them no chance to win that game. And Buffalo was playing really good. I mean, they were number one in all the power rankings for the first month, month and a half of the year. So that's why I think that one is their most impressive. But that they followed that with three straight losses, including to the Raiders at home. So, yes, it is kind of a more of the colors and the helmet and the reputation type of Steelers team than what they've actually put on the field.
You're right. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger's 6.6 yards per attempt this year. I mean, he made some throws and looked a little bit better against the Chargers. You're going to have the better quarterback on the field playing at home. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, name me that stat and I'll show you who's probably going to win the game almost everywhere. Just tell me who the better quarterback is, not even home or away. Tell me who the better quarterback is. The fact that you do get him at home and you do have the confidence of a team that's already beaten him once. And I do think you feel good about it. The other side is every time you think you got a handle on the Bengals, maybe turning the tide in the Steelers series, it goes the opposite way in a hurry. They stick it to you. It has happened over and over and over again. And it's about what? It's about what Jay doesn't like. You're supposed to bet the trend. And the trend is the Steelers always find a way to ruin things. But is that, you know, I just don't know that the past resonates here right now with this group. And I think they embrace the fact that it doesn't resonate with them, that they're different. And I asked a bunch of people today if they had any idea of the last time the Bengals beat the Steelers three times in a row, just to see if anybody would even venture a guess or care. Nobody really did. The fact that it was December 2nd, 1990. And, you know, Zach Taylor basically said, yeah, I think I was in pre-K. Jesse Bates wasn't born. And he's like, I don't, you know, that, but they all do admit changing the dynamic of this series means a lot. It means a lot in the building. It means a lot in the city. It means a lot for this team not being viewed as the same old Bengals. It eventually does have to go through the Steelers. And if you change the dynamic by doing something and winning three times in a row, doing it for the first time since in 31 years, what else can you change that hasn't happened for 30 years, you know?
Mm-hmm. I would argue they already have changed the dynamic of this series, and this one would just reinforce it, because that wasn't a fluke, that Monday night game last year. They were the better team. They were the more physical team. They took it to them and beat them, and that it was pretty much domination in week three this year. It feels like the dynamic has already changed. And to win this one and get that rare third straight win, that would just kind of reinforce that point. It's not like it's kind of hanging in the balance. Has it changed? Has it not? I feel like it has changed. And a loss isn't gonna reverse it. I don't think anyone's gonna think, oh, here we go again. It's gonna be 10 straight losses to the Steelers. But it would be significant in for so many of the reasons that you said. Plus, it's a season sweep. It really puts you in a good position to be 7-4 that sets the Bengals up so well for the playoffs with all these other home games coming behind it, two winnable road games. I don't want to say it's a pivot game because it feels like they're already going in the right direction, but it would be significant. And it's funny because I thought Jesse Bates, maybe the most telling comment he had today was he said when he first got here, none of these guys know the history of the series because they just don't look at that. They're so focused in the present. But he said he noticed. He's like, man, coaches are really tight this week. And that's what it seemed like under Marvin, that Steelers week, it got tight. And Zach and his staff are not treating it that way. It's a big game. It's a division game. But it's another game, and I think the attitude of the coaches in a given week trickles down to the team. And I think that's why you're seeing the Bengals play loose. And that did help last year that Pittsburgh had everything on the line. The Bengals didn't. They came out and just kind of let it fly. They won that game. And I think a lot of light bulbs went on that, hey, we're just as good as these guys.
You said it. I was, you know, it was just sort of a back and forth about the history and the 1990 and the dynamic of the series. Mm-hmm. And Jesse said that. And it perked up, and that was why I had to ask, was it not like that before? Because it was like the first time I feel like we've heard a player admit, like, because they never would throw willingly. And I don't know that he was necessarily trying to throw the old coaching staff mm-hmm. under the bus, but he was pointing out how it's different. Coaches got tight when they played the Steelers and in big games mm-hmm. and in prime time. And the records reflected that. And you got to have a team that can play loose and play free and play confidently against your rivals and in prime time and in the big games. And it's part of why you feel you wonder what it will look like when this team is in those big games again, because that doesn't exist. And you don't worry as much about a Steelers domination because everybody's out there so afraid to make a mistake. I'm glad you brought that up, Jay, because it's an important point. Mm-hmm. Is the newness of what this coaching staff is trying to do is how you change dynamics. It's why you change coaches. It's why you change the culture of everything, because it needed to be. And I thought that was really telling stuff from Jesse. It's really interesting. All right, let's just take a quick break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
To kind of get more, we've talked a lot from the Bengals side of things and where we're at. We got to bring in the hero of the week, MVP, comeback player of the day. Can we do that? Can we give it away just for the day? you caught up with Mark Caboli fresh off a ruptured Achilles. So we'll head on over to that interview.
All right. Well, we're going to head out to Pittsburgh right now and talk to Mark Caboli, our Steelers insider. And before we do that, I just want to let Bengals fans know, I know there's a spirited back and forth between Mark and Bengals fans. And I'm just asking Bengals fans to go a little easy on Mark this week, not just because it's Thanksgiving, but he's playing hurt. Mark, why don't you let everybody know what happened and how you're doing?
First of all, I thought I've turned a corner with Bengals fans because I've been I've been throwing some praise their way the last couple of weeks, and they've made me look like a jerk. So I guess that's a little backhanded compliment. So, well, it turns out, everybody loves to go to L.A. and West Coast and nice temperature. I hate L.A. I don't love L.A. because I was walking into the stadium Sunday night, and out of the blue, my Achilles ruptured, and it was not a fun next 24 to 48 hours trying to navigate an emergency room in Inglewood, California, to getting back to the hotel, to missing the entire game, and to flying back to Pittsburgh over the next 7 hours and three stops and wheelchairs and golf carts through airports. So it was kind of miserable. You know, I was holding out hope. I'm coming to Cincinnati this weekend, but I'm just arrived at the Steelers complex for their practice on Wednesday. And it took me like an extra 4 hours just to like get in the car and get dressed. So I don't know if that's going to quite happen this week, Jay. We're as Mike Tomlin likes to say, we're leaving the light on for me for going to Cincinnati, but that light's getting dim.
So you on like a knee scooter, or are you on crutches or a wheelchair?
Man, this boot, did you see everybody walk around in all the time?
Uh-huh.
And they're just like motoring around. My goodness, those things are impossible to walk in. I mean, my right foot, which is the good one now, is now 3 inches lower, maybe 4 inches lower than the boot, because the boot gets you off the ground. Mm. You ever try to walk when one leg's like 4 inches smaller than the other? It is impossible. So I have to learn how to do this. No scooter, But I am looking forward to going to Walmart at some time over the next 3 months so I can use the little rascal there to get around and get some shopping done. I always wanted to use the rascal, but I never did.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I hope you're feeling better. I hope everything goes well. It's a terrible situation. And I do hope you get to make it here, but certainly would understand if you don't. The first thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, week three. We all saw how that game played out. Tyler Boyd's comments after the game where he said the Steelers quit. I'm just wondering how those were received. If is this a team that's going to use that and feed off of that, or is it something they just kind of brush off?
Well, they're not going to use it publicly, I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised Mike Tomlin did address it. The time he said it in week three, he did it a couple of days later. He said he wasn't going to address it. Then he went on and addressed it. So I don't know what's going to happen behind the scenes. It might help, at least in the public eye, that it is Thanksgiving weekend and access is pretty much limited and of people we can get, or I would assume it would be more of a story than it's possibly going to be. I'm sure it's mentioned a little bit, but they got bigger things to worry about than what Tyler Boyd saying they quit or not. I mean, if you watch that game Sunday night, they got to find out how to get people healthy. I mean, Minkah Fitzpatrick, TJ Watt, were out, Joe Hayden were out, and that just absolutely devastated their defense. So I think they should be more worried about that than what Tyler Boyd saying that they might quit or not. So, but we'll see how the week plays out, but I really doubt that anything publicly would be said about that.
You know, Watt missed that first game against the Bengals too. That was 2 months ago. It seems like a completely different season now at this point. So, I mean, that was a big part of that game, but in the larger kind of overall picture, what are the Steelers doing better now than they were the first time the Bengals saw them back in September?
Well, I would say run the ball, but then you would see what happened Sunday night and you say, nope, that didn't happen, because I think they had like 40, 50 yards against a team that was the worst rushing team in the league, and they really didn't even try. So up until that point, the running game seemed to be coming around a little bit, a lot better, and that's what's led to them being able to win. Roethlisberger is playing probably some of his best ball right now as well, even though he only had mere hours to prepare for this game on Sunday night. When he was cleared Saturday, he put together a pretty spectacular performance. And if Bengals fans do remember, he did that to them last year as well when he wasn't cleared until Saturday of the game against Sunday, then put up 350 yards against them. So I think they're just a young team getting better and better. But the problem, like I keep mentioning, there's no really answer to having guys like Tyson Alualu, their nose tackle has been out a while, Stephon Tuitt out for the entire season so far, and the defensive line is just not equipped to deal with anybody pushing them around and a decent running game. And it looks like from afar that Cincinnati has a pretty good running game. So if I'd circle something there, Jay, I would look at the running game and see if, first of all, Steelers had trouble pushing those front three or four guys of the Bengals off the ball, and they were unable to create any space on the other side as well. So big game though, right? I mean, they need both of these teams are right in the match. That's what Roethlisberger talked about early on Wednesday about, hey, everything's still wide open and we got 12 teams here. Whoever gets hot at the right time is going to end up being a team to beat in the AFC. And he's absolutely right.
You know, it's funny you talked about that defense getting pushed around, because that was going to be my next question. The Steelers are 26th against the run. I went back and looked, and in Tomlin's first years, they were in the bottom half of the league only once. They were 21st in 2013. They were top six eight times. I mean, what is going on with that run defense? Is it personnel? Is it scheme? A little of both?
Well, back in those early years, there were some of those defensive players were getting a little old from their Super Bowl team, so that – but now it's a multitude of things. I mean, Devin Bush, they moved up 10 spots in the draft to take him 10th overall a couple years ago. And he's nowhere near. Yeah, he's not even a shell of what they thought he would be. I know he's coming off ACL injury, but that was 17 months ago now. He's struggling, not being able to make plays like he should be able to play that hurts. I mean, I can't even, I mean, I mentioned it a little bit, but Cam Hayward can only do so much. He's a superstar of this defense. But when you don't, when you had a veteran like Alualu at nose tackle and Stephon Tuitt, I mean, and you yank those guys out, and it's just very, very difficult for the, some guys that you've never heard of before. We're talking about Isaiah Loudermilk. You're talking about, you know, Chris Wormley, who's nothing more than a, you know, a plug and, you know, a 20 snap a guy game should be. Now he's playing 40 or 50. Isaiah Bugs, Henry Mondo, guys you'd never probably, guys that were lucky to make the roster in September are now starting and making considerable playing time because they just don't have the people. And missed tackling's been a big issue. It come up and bit him against Seattle, and it come up and bit him a couple weeks ago, I believe, against Chicago as well. So it's just they're just trying to plug different holes, and when they plug a hole, another one opens up. So I mean, you're not going to get much better unless you get people back, and then Shorthack doesn't look like the people are coming back. I don't know about Watt or Fitzpatrick. That would help. Hayden would help tremendously, but not much in the run game. So they're just going to have to hope these young guys play better. And that's hard to do because, like I said, none of them are even drafted guys.
You know, I think giving up 41 to the Chargers, you can kind of attribute some of that to not having Fitzpatrick or Watt or Hayden. Yeah. But I was wondering, you know, offensively, I know a loss is a loss, but do they take any encouragement? I mean, that was the first time they've topped 30 this year, that to go out and score 37 in that game. Does it feel like the offense maybe could have built some momentum off of that?
It might be like 16, 17 games dating back to early last year that they put up that kind of points. I mean, they were very opportunistic with the block punt and the interception. So they were able to turn those into points. So they should feel a little bit, you know, better about themselves. But, you know, now they got some injuries on the offensive line as well, where the offensive line has been an issue with youth and inexperience. Now you're yanking people out there because they're hurt, to put in guys that are less experienced or less talented as well in those spots right there. But, I mean, I think they know they put up the points, but they knew a lot of it was quick at pace. They were down big. They got fortunate with some of the turnovers. I think they're probably looking at it and saying, man, how the heck do we only rush for 35 yards with Najee Harris against the worst team? So it might actually be the flip side of that, Jay. Mm. It might be like, okay, we put up some points, but that's not how we're supposed to win games. You know, we're going to win games by running the ball and making five or six throws by our nearly 40-year-old quarterback. And that didn't happen on Sunday. It was more like the quarterback is the one who made the plays. So they're going to have to run the ball this game. Might sound like a cliche, but you got to run the ball and you got to convert. And you know as well as I do, Jay, I think Cincinnati had a pretty intricate, surprising defense against Pittsburgh week three on their third down situations where they basically set up the picket fence at the line, at the third down line to get. And that really baffled the Steelers a lot. So they're going to have to figure out how to beat that too.
You know, it was about this point last year. Steelers were 11-0, and that's when the swoon kind of hit. Is there any discussion about that this year? Does it feel like that could be in play again this year, even though they're not 11-0 right now?
It's not really any belief that that can happen. I think everybody knows it can happen, just for the fact that, you know, there's, if you look at their schedule with Cincinnati, Baltimore, Minnesota, Kansas City, all coming up in the next four games, and Cleveland and Baltimore again. So you look at the schedule and you shake your head and say, how am I going to get eight or nine wins out of this one? So it's in the back of everybody's mind, maybe not the Steelers' minds, because they like to take it one game at a time like every single team in the league does. But it's a belief that could happen. But there's also a belief if they played like they did in the middle stretch of the season, they could get the nine wins. They can win a tiebreaker. They can use that tie against the Lions to their advantage and, you know, not have to worry about any tiebreakers at all right now. I mean, last year, I think during that span where they struggled is when they got caught up in the old Baltimore COVID stuff, where that game was pushed back to Wednesday. Then the next week, they didn't know when they were going to play. And the Washington game was pushed back to a Tuesday. So they end up playing three games in 10 days. And it from that point on, it was just a different team. They went to Cincinnati, got their butt kicked. Went to Buffalo, got their butt kicked. And it was just the end right there. And I think a lot of it had to do with just the attrition that set in there with a 10 game over a, with no bye week either. They had no bye week, but they played Tennessee, and that was canceled at the last possible moment as well. So a lot of younger players on this team though. So maybe that does not happen this year.
You're still bitter about that canceled bye week, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, they canceled it on a Friday. I mean, what good is that? It's just a normal, you know, nothing. I mean, not me. I mean, well, I guess it was me.
But yeah, it's always us first.
Like, what are you canceling on a Friday for? You knew this earlier in the week.
Well, given everything you said, that, you know, the way they've been playing, the schedule that's ahead, do you feel like, are their playoff hopes done if they don't win this one?
It's going to be tough. I wouldn't say done because just the fact that we've seen what happened over in the AFC over the past couple of weeks where one team looks like a world beater and the other team looks like crap and it flips around in like 2 weeks. I mean, you're not going to – I'm pretty sure a team's going to win the – or make the playoffs at either 8 or 9 wins here. I mean, it's just a matter of who's going to win the tiebreaker here. So I think the bigger issues, like I mentioned, was – just the schedule. I mean, the schedule's brutal here with Cincinnati and Baltimore and Minnesota on a Thursday and Kansas City a day after Christmas. And Tennessee's in there too, my fault. Which would look great 2 weeks ago, and now they look like an easier win. Cleveland, who knows? So, like I said, it's an important win because they need to have divisional wins. But if they lose this game, I wouldn't quite say they're out. I'm like, put themselves in a very, very difficult position. I wouldn't quite say they're out. I don't think that goes with anybody. I mean, if Cincinnati loses, I don't think they're done. If Baltimore loses, I don't think they're done. If Denver loses, I mean, I think it's just so packed in there that anybody can make it.
All right. Well, hey, I know it's a tough week for you. I really do appreciate you taking some time to talk to us. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and don't be afraid to ask for help if you need to reach the top shelf from the Jazzy.
Forget about that. Can you like come pick me up? And you know, I would come, guaranteed to come to the game. But my goodness, I need like a handicapped parking spot, and I know where they park us in Cincinnati. I need like an Uber just to get to the stadium. It would take me 6.5 hours to walk from my car to the stadium.
Well, hey, I will ask their media relations guy if he can get you a handicap spot.
I need one of those in general now. I want to take advantage of this now, Jay.
No reason not to.
I am just like totally out of commission here for three months. I can't even, you know what? We'll file this under a little bit of too much information here. I'm totally baffled of how I'm going to take a shower now. I can't get into that. I can't get into that tub without this boot on, or I'll fall on my face. We will not stream that live on The Athletic, though.
Okay. Let's not do that. Well, hey, again, thanks so much for taking the time, and I hope I do see you Sunday. If I don't, I understand. And again, we really appreciate you jumping on with us, and hope the new nice relationship with the Bengals fans continues.
I'm telling you, I think they're still probably the most talented in the division. And I thought that that whole, learning how to win thing was bunkus, but apparently it might be true. So I think they do have maybe the best chance out of anybody in the division to come away with this. I'm not a big Baltimore fan. I think Cleveland's not very good. We know where the Steelers are. So if Bengals can put any thing together here and get some continuity, I think this is a wide open division for them to be able to come in and steal.
Just winning fans right and left. Take care, Mark.
All right. See you, Jay.
All right. Good to hear from this week's hero, Mark Eboli. And hopefully he starts healing up and gets around better and gets everything taken care of. And, but always good to hear his insights on everything that's going on in Pittsburgh. And they're an interesting team as well. There's a lot going on there, but I know that everybody on that defense is going to be happy to have all of their key components back in the mix. And that was the common theme amongst everybody on the Bengals side of things yesterday, was when people asked about the first game, be like, I don't know. They didn't have TJ Watt. think as a defensive player of the year candidate. Like, it's hard to say that you really handled the Steelers when they didn't have him out there. He does change everything. And especially when you're talking about a Bengals team that you worry about them going up against a team that can get home with four. The Steelers definitely can do that with all their horses.
Pretty remarkable if they do have TJ Watt, because I know everybody's talked about how awful that Lions Steelers game was to watch. That was like the one they showed those crowd shots after TJ Watt went down, and it looked so bad. I mean, it looked like his knee buckled, and you're thinking, oh my God, that's season ending. That was awful. And then they announce it as a hip injury instead of a knee. And to see him, you know, presumably miss only one game and come back, I mean, it's pretty remarkable. And he is a game changer. But like you said, they've got a plan for how to slow those guys down. And it's 2 weeks in a row that they've played these elite edge rushers. You're going to see really good pass rushers every week. But what the Raiders had and what the Steelers had with TJ Watt and Highsmith, and then they've got Hayward in the middle too. It feels like it can roll over, and you wonder, you know, a lot of times you hear players say if they hold a guy out and they're like, well, he could have played if it was a playoff game. This isn't a playoff game, but is that a case here where if it wasn't a division game, would TJ Watt take another week off? And he's coming back because this game does mean so much. Is he going to be 100% the TJ Watt we're used to seeing? That's going to be worth watching. But these Bengals tackles have done a good job against the edge guys, and the Burrow's great at getting the ball out quick. I don't know. I don't think this is going to be a TJ Watt type of game.
We'll find out pretty quick, because it usually happens pretty fast with TJ. They certainly don't want to be in a position where they're playing from behind and having to come back. The one thing I want to mention, Jay, I know you got stats on. We've mentioned a couple times that the Bengals scored 30 points in four of their last five. When's the last time that they scored 30 points against the Steelers?
It has been a long time. It has been 32 consecutive games since they have scored 30 points against the Steelers. I mean, that's all kinds of good teams. The 2015 team didn't do it. The 2009 team didn't do it. You have to go all the way back to 2005 team. It was the 2005 team.
Yeah, 38-31 in Pittsburgh, right?
38, yes. But overall, 104 games against the Steelers. How many times do you think the Bengals, because this isn't a recent thing, how many times do you think they hit 30 in those 104 games?
104 games. How many did they hit 30? Seven.
Nah, you're close. It was eight.
Wow.
So it's not just the Bengals. The Steelers rarely give up 30. Like I mentioned before, it had been a long time, and the Chargers did it last week. So I wonder, might be worth looking up, when was the last time they gave up 30 in back-to-back games? I bet you'd have to go back quite a ways. And I don't think it's going to take 30 to win this game. I think if the Bengals score 30, they win. I can't see them losing some crazy shootout that looks like the Chargers-Steelers game last week. But if they can get to 30, that kind of feels like that magic number where they'll win the game if they get there for a fifth time in six games.
It would be an impressive feat to say the least. All right, let's dive into it, Jay. Let's do a little bit of growler bet here, huh?
All right.
Had a so close last week, thanks to you adding a little bit more sadistic nature to it. I'd appreciate that. This week's growler bet is a two-parter, and it all goes back to what we've talked about the deep ball and keeping everything underneath, and how many yards will be Joe Burrow's longest completion? But that's too easy, Jay.
Yeah.
And to whom? You need to have both of these correct. You need to know who caught it and how long it was on the nose. So Joe Burrow's longest completion in Sunday's game against Pittsburgh and to who? Hashtag Bengals Growler Bet on Twitter or pdaner@theathletic.com. If you want to email me, make sure you have the word growler in the subject header. That's your growler bet this week. If you get it, delicious 50 West beer, now selling Christmas cookie, is could be yours. All right, Jay, what do you have?
So I still got Vegas on my mind a little bit, and I'm thinking side pot would be interesting here. Between you and I, what percentage of our growler bet submissions are going to have Chase? Because I think everybody's going to pick Chase just because that's the way they've gone to get their deep balls. But Pittsburgh's going to try to take him away, and I think they'll be successful in that. I'm going T. Higgins 44. It's been a while since we've seen T. Higgins really kind of stretch the field and get a big one. I feel like he's due, and I feel like the Steelers kind of rolling coverage towards Jamar is going to open that up.
Okay. That's your palindrome. I have.
Oh, I even forgot about that. That is a palindrome.
And you nailed it. I have a prime number for you, Jay.
All right.
I'm going to say 37 yards to CJ Uzomah.
Ooh, you know, yeah. It feels like tight ends do have big roles in these Bengals Steelers games for whatever reason. That's a really good pick.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I feel like we haven't heard from CJ in a little bit, and I feel like he's due, and all this attention talking about TB, who had a good game last week, and they trying to get Higgins to go off, and they're going to be really focused on Chase, and Mixon, who had the big game last week. Yeah. That's when you slip a CJ Uzomah in on him, and in some of their biggest wins, he's had some of his best games.
Yeah, I like that.
Run, pass, or boot. Jay, you've got this one. What'd you come up with?
Yeah, so it again, it's going to be what kind of game is it? Do the Steelers focus on Jamar? How much? So what will be greater? Jamar Chase receiving yards, Joe Mixon rushing yards, or Big Ben passer rating?
Okay. This is kind of a hard one. This is a good one to put out there because you really can see it a bunch of different ways. Here's the thing. Ben, he throws picks and it kills your passer rating. So for that reason, I'm going to boot Ben's passer rating at 6. I'm going to say 63. I'm going to run with Joe Mixon rushing yards. I'm going to say he ends up with 89. And I will pass on Jamar Chase receiving yards with 65.
Yeah, I have the exact same order for the same reasons. The Bengals in particular have done a pretty good job. Ben has had his moments against them, but the Bengals find ways to get picks against him. And we saw Logan Wilson get two in the first game. Even if they don't get picks, I don't think it's going to be one of those games where Ben throws for a lot of yards. He only has one 300-yard game this year, and it was that one against the Bengals because it was check down, check down, check down, and it just all kind of added up late. So even if they don't get the picks, I think they can hold his passer rating down. And I feel like this, if last week wasn't a breakout for Joe Mixon, I feel like this week could be. Like Caboli said, they struggle tackling, and it feels like the AFC North type of game that Joe Mixon really loves. And I could see him having a huge, huge day against the Steelers on Sunday.
All right, prediction time. Time to put it down. Jay, what do you got?
I don't think they get to 30, but I think they get close. I'm going to say 27-24 Bengals on an Evan McPherson 50-plus yard field goal. Not at the gun, but that will be the final points.
Yeah, I'm picking the Bengals too. I don't, like I said earlier, I think we're living on reputation, and I look at how the Steelers have gotten to 5-4-1, and I don't I just don't know that I'm buying it all the way. This league is crazy and you never know what's going to happen, but I think the Bengals do win. I do. I have them 24-21. I won't say McPherson is the gun. I'll just say the score and call it a day. So we'll see, Jay. I don't know. When's the last time? I'm sure that we have both picked the same and been wrong many times this year, probably. I have to go back and check, but I feel like these predictions, as much as you try to have a feel, and we've picked many right, look around this league. It is just so hard. There are a lot of people that have lost a lot of money this year. Unless you're betting all underdogs all year, then you're loving life. You're doing the Scrooge McDuck money swim. But, I mean, it's just Bengals 4.5-point favorites. That's almost something you don't want to see at this point, the way this league has gone. The way underdogs have won and home field advantage hasn't meant as much as you would think. For that fact, you know, enjoy the game, basically, you know, because I do think you just never know. I love when history is so involved like this, where you have such a dynamic a history of the Steelers turning it on the Bengals whenever they feel like they're getting it together. And here we go again.
Because history means nothing to the players, but it means everything to the fan base, because they've lived and died through every single game. And I think that's why what makes it so fun is, you know, how much it means to the fans. And really, when you were going through that whole thing about predictions, all that was going through my mind is, I need to build a spreadsheet with our predictions from each week so we can track those.
Well, just gave yourself more homework, Jay. I did. What is new?
What else am I going to do tomorrow?
We will be back with the walkout after the game on Sunday, of course. So look forward to that after what will be a very interesting evening in the AFC North. I hope everybody has a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your full plates and your family and the football, even though the football is a lot of bad. It's still football, and it's on TV, which means if you're an American, you're probably going to watch it. So be it. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Again, thanks to everybody who's a subscriber. And if you're not, thanks for listening. If you want to get in on the deal that's going on through this weekend. So I highly recommend $1 a month for the next 12 months. If you get a chance to subscribe, go to theathletic.com/hearthatpodcastgrowling, or check out any of the stories Jay and I have written, and you can go there and subscribe. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you after the game on Sunday. Have a good one.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.